Jim Cramer. Jim, are you you're celebrating, I would assume?
Aaron, three quick points. One, we will be up the most we've ever been in history today. Second, if they hadn't done this, we would probably be down 1,000 points. I think the odds for a crash today and Monday would have been the highest it's been since 1987. And third, this was perhaps the most important day you could possibly do this. Many of my friends were set up completely wrong. I have many short people who are just literally thought that this was going to be a very down day. People caught in the wrong direction. It's a brilliant move by the Fed. 2 weeks ago, when I had my talk with you, they were doing the exact opposite. They obviously heard us. They acted. This is the beginning of the run to 14,500.
Kramer, who couldn't have heard you?
Wait. Look.
This is going to be the biggest up day in history?
Yeah, I think so.
In point terms,
yes, in point terms, not in percentage.
Yeah.
How many ways can you say publicity stunt? Mad Money Machine, show 75, penultimate week of August.
Look, they nailed it. I hated them 2 weeks ago. Now I love them.
Welcome back, everyone. This is Paul Douglas Boyer. You have tuned your podcast listening device to the Mad Money Machine, a show that is baseless and ugly. Loser of the Best Business Podcast Award. Coming up on this show, Cramer gets his wish. Cramer gets his wish. Cramer doesn't get his wish. And Cramer recommends an index fund. We'll look at risk ease, and we will have some summer fun. Yes, Jim Cramer has gotten a couple of his wishes. As Meatloaf would say, 2 out of 3 ain't bad. He got the discount rate cut, which is what we featured on the beginning of the last show, show 74. And he got some publicity. Yes, I went out to my driveway Saturday morning and picked up a copy of Barron's magazine. And who was smiling at me from the front cover? None other than Mr. Booyah, Jim Cramer. On the cover, it has his picture. It says, crazy antics aside, CNBC superstar Jim Cramer's stock picks can't seem to beat the Dow. In fact, his viewers would be better off putting their money in an index fund. Oh my goodness! Can you believe that Barron's is telling you what the Mad Money Machine has been telling you these past 12 to 18 months? Well, it's a 3-page article, and the title of the article is Shorting Cramer by Bill Alpert. And let me just tell you straight away that on the Monday following this article on Mad Money TV show, Jim Cramer called this article baseless and ugly. But in fact, as I read it, I found it very accurate. And it's actually a little bit of a surprise that Jim would go to such extremes calling this baseless and ugly. So, I guess by logical extension, the Mad Money Machine show is baseless and ugly. Well, what are we talking about in the article then? Well, first of all, it mentions Jim Cramer's screaming meltdown on CNBC and how it quickly made rounds on YouTube. That's true. Now, Barron says that he gets more than 100,000 viewers per night. That's different than what the New York Post reported as 57,000 viewers, remember? What they're trying to do in the article is evaluate Jim Cramer's stock picks. They say after a comprehensive and careful review of his stock picks by Barron's, they find that his picks haven't beaten the market. Over the past 2 years, viewers holding Cramer's stocks would be up 12%, while the Dow rose 22% and the S&P 500 up 16%, according to a record of 1,300 of Jim Cramer's buy recommendations compiled by the website YourMoneyWatch.com. Now, I've talked about YourMoneyWatch.com before. It says they also looked at a database of Cramer's Mad Money picks maintained by his website, TheStreet.com. It only covers the past 6 months, but it includes an astounding 3,458 stock picks, mostly buys, and says those picks were flat to down in relation to the market. Count commissions, and you would have been much better off in an index fund that simply tracks the market. Well, this is the conclusion that I came to at the end of last year, of course, during the Portfolio Smackdown, and it's coming true again this year in the Portfolio Smackdown. It says, when we asked Cramer and CNBC for their own records of Mad Money's stock picking performance, aha, which they have none, they had more excuses than a Tour de France cyclist dodging a blood test. They complained that the list from YourMoneyWatch.com contained some stocks from the program's lightning round, in which Cramer gives a quick analysis and a buy or sell decision on stocks phoned in live by viewers. These, they argued, shouldn't count in our tally. Well, what? Why should we even watch this silly lightning round thing? Why waste 20 minutes every day with this stupid lightning round that, by your own admission, shouldn't count for anything? CNBC officials said the viewers should buy Cramer's picks a week after they're aired. They said that the show is mainly educational, not just about stock picking. We should focus only on the tiny universe of stock selections, about 12 a week, that Cramer researches the most. Well, we have done that here on this show too, haven't we? Well, one thing I should point out too is the Barron's article did not mention MadMoneyMachine.com in their article. Well, that's a shame, because what we've done this year so far is we have a board of directors that are picking stocks according to Cramer's recommendations and trying to beat the market. And some are beating the market, some are not, and on average, they are not. In the end, it says, Jim Cramer has defined himself as a financial journalist who gives you clear buy and sell recommendations to make you money. If he's serious about his mission, he or CNBC should publish a database that tracks all his picks from the show's launch date. Even cheerleaders need to be accountable. Well, that is what I've said before on this show, too. I went into a rant before saying, Jim Cramer, you should publish a portfolio that we can track of your stock picks and show us how you can beat the market. Well, of course he's not going to do that, because no one can beat the market over the long term.
Maybe I'm amazed at the way I really need.
I asked the question a couple of shows ago. Why isn't Paul McCartney making any new hits? Well, you don't need to make new hits when you can remake the old hits. That was Blake Morgan from the PodSafe Music Network with Maybe I'm Amazed. And it's a very highly downloaded track. Wonderful. Glad to play it for you in its entirety. So after last Friday's discount rate cut, Kramer was so puffed up that he said that Friday would be the biggest market gainer ever. Let's listen.
Aaron, three quick points. One, we will be up the most we've ever been in history today.
Kramer, this, who couldn't
wait,
have
wait,
heard
wait,
you?
Wait, 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 wait.
What?
This is going to be the biggest up day in history?
Yeah, I think so.
In point terms,
yes,
I
Yes, in point terms, not in percentage.
Yeah. Okay.
And anybody watching that who had emotions about stock picking would have started buying stocks like crazy that morning. And did it come true? Well, of course it did not. Again, but not matching the wild extremes of Kramer's enthusiasm. Let's just go ahead and have a summer blowout today. I can tell that you're still listening, even though it's August, because you've got 21 comments in the show notes so far for this show. Let's just make this the longest show that we've ever had on the Mad Money Machine. I'm going to play some extra long musical tracks, starting with this one.
To the ring, to the right. Point of view, each retreat to the corner that's defined by you. To the ring, to the right. Point of lonely rain. She is the boxer. She knows when and where to strike. He is the boxer. Fight or flight, a dun drum school. To the ring, to the right. Point of no return, no passion left to burn. The boxers grow weary, their eyesight blurs. To the ring, to the right, point of view. Lonely rain. She is the boxer. She knows when and where to strike. He is the boxer. He knows no peaceful sleep.
Sean Leaf from the PodSafe Music Network. You know, I was in Virginia Beach a year ago, and up there was a stage being set up on the sand, and the sign said, "Appearing tonight, Carmen Leaf." There was already a large crowd of people there to watch the band, and dumb me, I didn't stick around to watch. From the PodSafe Music Network, that's Carmen Leaf with The Boxer. Here at the Mad Money Machine, August is Riskies Month, step 8 in the 12-step program for active investors. In Riskies, we should understand how risk, return, and time are related. I've mentioned how lawyers speak legalese, and the best investors speak riskies. Learning the language of riskies requires investors to have a basic understanding of the concepts of risk, return, time, and correlation. Understanding riskies is essential for successful investing. Most investors instead chase the short-term returns of stocks, markets, managers, or styles, and never truly understand the impact of risk, time, and correlation on their returns. The more fluent you speak riskies, the higher your risk capacity, risk exposure, and expected returns. And I turn now to Mark Hebner, the author of The Index Funds, a 12-step program for active investors. Mark, our listeners are clearly interested in increasing their ability to speak riskies. But before we get into the finer details, give us some context as to how important this is and how it improves their approach to investing.
Well, first of all, it is extremely important that investors get a grip around the concepts of riskies. You got to be able to speak this language of risk. Otherwise, you are just going to be constantly confused about what's going on in the stock market. At the heart of the conversation is the old bell-shaped curve. Most of us took a statistics class somewhere in our life, and you probably have faintly in the back of your memory this little image of the bell-shaped curve, where there are sort of extreme events on the tail of the bell, and in the center of the bell is the average return and the most common returns over time. Knowing the shape of this bell-shaped curve is the most important thing investors can do in helping to make selections for them. And when the bell is narrow and the range of outcomes of your investments are tight and narrow, typically the returns are lower. That means you have a safe investment, and safe investments mean lower returns. When the bell gets wider, meaning you have wider ranges of outcomes in your investments, typically the returns get greater. And so investors need to study up on this a little bit, go buy a book, Statistics for Dummies, or just get my book, not to shamelessly promote the thing, but I have made a tremendous effort here to try to get across to investors the key concepts in riskies that are important for them in making their investment choices. And once they've got a hold of these, it will reverse the way they make choices. And so they're not focused on returns anymore. They're just focused on risk. And this will make them a better investor.
Well, the basics are covered in the book, as you just mentioned, and everyone needs to know them. But tell us a little bit more about the advantages of being familiar with riskies and the language of investing.
Well, the key advantage is it refocuses investors on the concept of risk. And in doing so, it will make them better investors. Let's just look at an example of how this is so important. Let's say that you wanted to contrast the risk of owning one stock versus owning all the stocks in an index. Let's just take the S&P 500, for example. If you own one stock in the S&P 500, what is the risk or the uncertainty of capturing the expected returns of that investment in, let's say, a one-year period? Well, it turns out that the average stock has a standard deviation of about 50. So if it has an average return of 10, it would be 10 plus or minus 50, two-thirds of the future returns in any kind of period you want to look at, monthly or annually, whatever it might be. But here's the real catch. If you looked at buying an index fund instead, the risk drops down to about 20 instead of 50, and the expected return remains the same. This discovery was first published by Harry Markowitz back in 1952, and it in essence shows you the benefits of diversification. As you go from one stock to two stocks, now you get to average those returns, and you add a third stock and a fourth stock, and pretty soon it starts smoothing out your returns, meaning you have less risk or less variation in return. By the time you get to 500 stocks, you get pretty much the minimum amount of risk, which for the S&P 500, unfortunately for investors, is still about 20. That includes a stock market crash. If we eliminate the crash, it's about 15. So understanding these concepts, you would say, well, gee, why would I buy one stock if I have this huge risk associated with it and the same expected return of the index? The answer is you wouldn't if you knew risk ease.
Okay, let's take all of that, and can you tie that together for us in a practical example?
Well, the concepts of risk ease could be tied together by getting investors to look at their whole portfolios and try to identify the risk of that whole portfolio. Once they know that, they can now also benchmark their portfolios against similar risk levels, such as portfolios of index funds. That's a very practical approach if you could get your hands on the risk number associated with your portfolio. Unfortunately, we find few investors who can do this on their own, and it really requires the assistance of some kind of professional to do that. Speaking of which, if your investment professional doesn't understand the language of risk, and in particular, standard deviation, my recommendation to you is you get a new one.
Okay, and how does understanding risk ease help our listeners better tap into the power of index funds specifically?
The power of the index fund is, in essence, its efficient capturing of risk. And so it does that because it's so diversified. A globally diversified portfolio of index funds typically has 16,000 stocks from 40 countries around the world. It doesn't get any more diversified than that. And when you do that, you completely eliminate the individual risks of all of those stocks through diversification, and you're left with just the risk of capitalism. And you get to a point where you can't diversify any further. Once you've reached that point, you get to what statisticians call systematic risk. It's the risk of the system, as I said, that cannot be diversified any further. That's the goal of investing, is to eliminate the specific risks that can be diversified and get your portfolio down to what's called systematic risk. So by learning the lessons in step 8 about risk and the sources of risk and the types of risk and the quantification of risk, investors are allowed to shift their focus on these risk concepts as opposed to chasing the ridiculous returns of stocks or times or managers or styles, all of which have literally no value to investors. So that's my hope, is that through the education of this particular risk ease step, investors will find something new to look at and new to study, rather than combing through the short-term return on some investment.
All right, well, that wraps it up for Step 8, Risk Ease. For sources of information, go to IFA.com and read more about this. Also, Mark talked about the benchmarking tool. There is a benchmarking tool at IFA.com that you can compare your portfolio against a broadly based portfolio of index funds. I highly suggest you use the benchmarking tool. And you can take their risk capacity survey to find out how much risk you should be willing to take with your money. And if you take that risk capacity survey now, at the end you can get a free e-copy of the book we're talking about, Index Funds, a 12-step program for active investors. Win, 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 win. Go to IFA.com.
Tonight, Jupiter's step Rebuild all your ruin. Peace and love will win the day in spite of all your losing.
Mad Money Machine Summer Music Blowout continues now with Ann Wilson and Led Zeppelin's Immigrant Song.
We come from the land of the ice and snow, from the midnight sun where the hot springs blow. The hammer of the gods will drive our ships to new land to fight the whore, sing and cry. Valhalla, I am coming.
So what is this business about Kramer recommending an index fund? On Monday's show, after the Barron's article, Kramer talked about how you should buy some regional banks. And he said it was too risky to pick any one particular regional bank. So you should buy all regional banks, or at least an index of regional banks. The ETF called the KBW Regional Banking ETF, ticker symbol KRE. It has more than 50 holdings, and its five-year earnings growth is more than 9.4%. It carries a weighted average market cap of more than $2 billion with no mortgage problems foreseen. Well, take that and extend it to all stocks, and Kramer, I think you've got a winner. Why pick sectors? Why be in and out of sectors at any particular time? No one can predict the movement of sectors any more than they can predict the movement of a particular stock with long-term success. So just buy all stocks in index funds across the globe, and now you've got a winner. And speaking of ETFs versus individual stocks, a year ago, August of 2006, Kramer said, it's stupid to pick an ETF. over an individual stock. For example, the pharmaceutical holders. Why would you buy that index of pharmaceutical companies? Because it has a bunch of dogs in it. Instead, you should buy Pfizer, because we know that's going to be a good one. Well, 1 year into that pick, and that is wrong also. The pharmaceutical holders ETF is up about 8%. Pfizer's up only about 6% over that time. Well, and also, Pfizer stock has been much more volatile than the ETF. Extend that again to all sectors of the market, and you can see where we're coming from. In case you haven't been listening, then, here are the basics to investing. One, take the risk capacity survey. Understand how much risk you can afford to take. Step two, when you get the answer to that, it'll tell you a portfolio that matches your risk capacity. Third thing to do then is select index funds that match that portfolio, and now you can invest and relax. And that is all there is to it. I want to thank all the kind folks who've made comments in show 74 out of the website madmoneymachine.com. Let's see. We have 21 comments so far. Any duplicates? There might be one duplicate. What we're doing, though, is anyone who comments in the show notes for show 74, you'll have a chance to win the big book, Index Funds, 12-Step Program for Active Investors. And I will be giving away a copy of the hardbound book on the next show, show 76. So if you haven't put a comment in show 74 yet, get out to the website and do that. I will enter your name in a random drawing that I'll announce on the next show. And I can't wait to give you this book. I hope you are the winner. And in reading through some of the comments so far, I'll try to answer some of your critiques, some of your criticism. Let's see what we've got. Jean-Claude says, in one of your shows, you had a guest who alluded to the debate of allocation. I think it would be a great segment in the show to discuss allocation and weightings. All right, I think I will do that. Brian writes that he is not in the United States. He lives in the Czech Republic and would like to make money in crowns. We're not in the euro yet, and he doesn't want to be moving money from one currency to another. Question is, do you have any tools for investors who are outside of the United States? Brian, I do not. I don't have a clue of what to invest in outside the United States. I hope someone will either call in or write to me in answer to Brian's question. Let's get Brian an answer. How does someone living in the Czech Republic invest in index funds? Oliver 2 says, you should do a Nike Plus challenge for your viewers, listeners. I'll look into that. Tim Tipton says, can't wait to get back to the regular length. The short one's messing up my commuting schedule. Wink. Brad says, hope you don't jump on the IFA bandwagon too much. They have an excellent product, it appears, but I'd like to think that you are semi-independent. And Game Run goes through a list of likes and dislikes, and he says, the dislikes, lack of valuable information about your sponsor. Maybe it's been on a show I haven't heard yet. Oh, gosh, I'm sure it is. Tell what options you would be into if IFA wasn't an option. Says, in parentheses, not meeting the 100K requirement. It's also nice to know that if you want IFA, you need to be hooked up with a Schwab or Fidelity account. Doesn't work from my TD Ameritrade account. At least I don't think it does. And also, Brian, Game Run says, I started running recently too. You weren't kidding when you said you run slow. Sorry for the shot on your speed. If you want to try to run faster, try turning on the afterburners when going down hills. Also, if running on a flat area, run harder for 10 to 20 seconds every mile. You'll be shaving half minutes off your 3 mile runs in no time. He says he bought an iPod armband on eBay. The tunes shave off a couple seconds. Oh, thanks, Ryan. Well, you can see that mixed into my recent runs are some walks. Yeah, I ran 10K on August 15th, and the next day my knees were hurting. I figured out by listening to Fidipidations, one of the winning podcasts out there, that you should run by hitting your heels on the ground first and then rolling onto the balls of your feet. And I've discovered that I've been running just slapping my entire foot down onto the pavement. So I need to, and when I do run with my heels first, I can tell that there's much less shock to my knees. So once my knees heal up a little bit, I'm going to start running again, but for the past week or so, I've been walking. But anyway, thanks to all of you who have commented so far. Keep the comments coming for a chance to win the book on show 76. This is Paul Douglas Boyer saying it takes money to make money, and it takes being baseless and ugly to make a mad money machine. I'll see you next week. In the meantime, definitely go to IFA.com and give me a call at 206-734-4763 or email me at feedback@madmoneymachine.com. Go to the website madmoneymachine.com. Some music on this program provided by music.podshow.com.